This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and joining me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, I'm ready to record today. I've got a couple of double-strong Ractaginos, but I do have to make one comment first. Your eyes are bothering me a little bit today.
I'm sorry. You know, I do have that extra eye I just had.
That's,
you know,
what it
installed.
Is. It's the middle one. Yeah, the middle one is throwing me off just a little bit, but I think I'll be all right.
There's nothing. I mean, forget double vision. Triple vision is right. The way to go.
But hey, you know, if you can deal with my transparent skull, I think I can handle your third eye.
Well, it helps that you're wearing a hat today, so it's a little less noticeable. So
that's why I'm doing it, just to make sure, you know, that you're not too distracted. As we continue our look at the Mirror Universe in Deep Space Nine, we're on episode 4 of the 5-episode Mirror Universe arc that takes place on DS9, and that means we're talking about Resurrection and, of course, the dating preferences of Jadzia Dax and Kira Nerys, which kicks off what is otherwise a much more serious episode.
Yeah, it is a funny way to begin the episode, you know, with them just chatting about dating preferences. And I kind of love, you know, that obviously Jadzia is just a slightly more adventurous in her dating life than Kira has ever been. And it's very fun to kind of have this kind of follow up with the wedding, you know, and the super seriousness of the 6-arc series that we got of, you know, taking back Deep Space Nine. And so honestly, to kind of come into the cold open and have it just be a fun conversation between two people where they're kind of ribbing each other for their way of looking at things was nice. And, you know, I don't know, but in today's culture, two people not seeing completely eye to eye on things, but giving each other a hard time about it, but still liking each other, it's just refreshing.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, since we're talking about that, let me ask you this question. According to the companion, there was another scene before this, which tied us into that 6-part arc and referenced Zial's death. It's still Dax and Kira, but they're in Kira's quarters and they're looking at Zial's painting. And Dax notices that Kira misses Zial, and Zial mentions that, you know, I'll get over it. Death and I are old friends, which is a pretty heavy scene when you compare it with what we actually got. Now, then that scene would have then run into the corridor scene that we do see. Do you feel it was a good idea to, I think they cut it for time reasons, not so much because of its content, but ultimately Do you prefer starting off with a little bit of lighthearted banter like this coming off of that heavy arc, or would you have preferred to have that connection to the arc?
You know, I was thinking about that because I was rereading some of the behind the scenes stuff and the companion about this episode as we were going to record. And, you know, I like the idea of the scene. I think that it could have played really well, you know, when she says Death and I are old friends, and Jadzia would say to her, well, then you can bring Death to dinner. You know, yeah. And so it finds a way to transition into something lighter. And I think it would have been a nice moment to kind of pay homage to everything that has come. But I can understand when you're looking at the scene, the part to cut is probably that part there.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to do cold open, I mean, you just came off the wedding. This gives you another little bit of a lighthearted start to the episode. And the episode has a little bit of a lighter heart in general throughout a lot of it, especially when it comes to the crew interactions, which are some of the best parts of the episode. And so, you know, as much as I would have liked to have had the scene the way they had written it there, I do think they made a wise choice in just saying, you know what, let's cut this and take the funnier part and just start with that. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, too, the scene continues to be funny all the way into ops.
Right.
And so I feel like there isn't enough time to really sit in that conversation at the beginning to really make it worth it to have it.
Yeah. What if they had upped the humor element and as they're walking down the corridor, they just passed by Nog and he was still practicing his dance from the wedding reception?
That would have been pretty funny. Or, you know, just somebody still passed out from the wedding reception.
Right.
You know, would have been pretty awesome.
But I'm picturing it as, like, they don't say anything to Nog. There's no close-up of him. He's just there in the background for a moment. You know, that kind of just light.
Just going, ha! Ha!
Exactly. Oh, all right, all right. Well, okay, let's talk more about the episode itself. As a setup, this is a reverse mirror. It's one of these Star Trek Mirror Universe episodes that takes place in our universe, not in theirs, by having a character from that universe, in this case, coming over to ours, you know, interacting with ours. More recently, of course, I think of Star Trek Discovery and the fact that Captain Lorca was in our universe for a long time. It's a little bit different, the way he got there, the reason he was there, and the length of time he was there. This one is more like a covert mission. We have to come and steal an orb because it's going to help us with a plan in our own universe. But when you think of Mirror Universe episodes, you usually think of the ones that take place over there. So our characters are in unfamiliar surroundings. How do you feel about a story like this one where that's reversed?
You know, I thought it was the whole idea of kind of having them be more in our universe was interesting because it does add a different dimension. I mean, if you're going to do another Mirror Universe episode, I do feel like it gets kind of tiresome just to continue going over to the alternate universe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it gives them an opportunity to play with in a different sense the whole idea of these different characters. And you know, comics do this all the time with being from different Earths and all that kind of stuff. You know, especially think of like DC and all their different Earths, and there's a myriad of different Flashes and Supergirls and whatever, but they all have their own personalities and they can be slightly different and everything. And so they do that well here, where you get a Barile who's the complete opposite of what he was in the Prime universe.
But he is equally boring, though.
You know, I don't agree with you. I kind of actually enjoyed him more as this Barile than I ever did, obviously,
okay,
the Barile that we got. Because, well, yes, that Barile was super boring.
I'll give you that, but still, he's very boring and personality is very dead. It's actually a sad personality, I think, with this one, which, I mean, would maybe play into the life that he has led in the Mirror Universe. But anyway, we don't have to get into a Barile discussion right now, but that popped in my head as you said that. Okay. So anyway, well, you know, keep on speaking about this.
The thing that I really thought that was done well was giving us that opportunity to see a character come into the Prime universe and be moved by what he sees.
Okay.
And I thought that was one of the most interesting parts of the episode, because you really do see Boreal being very affected by a place that has faith, a place that has people that he could grow close to that would actually really care about him. There's a whole sense where you see his demeanor change throughout the episode, so that by the very end, he really does have a choice. You know, he could stay in this universe. He could make that choice to do what is better for himself and to be a better version of himself. In the end, he can't make that choice because he actually won't allow him. And he's actually his own worst enemy. He just won't allow himself to be a better person. Mm. And so I thought it was really interesting to see that, because in the end, you know, what is most true in life is that we are some of our choices, and who we choose to be is who we will be. And that choice is whether we're going to be a good person or not a good person. We have that choice. And so Boreal, what I thought was most interesting in the episode was watching him realize, I could be a better person. I could be somebody different. And yet in the end, he's not brave enough to take the leap to say, you know what, I will choose to be better. I will instead just choose to be what I've always been, because you know what, in the end, is actually easier. He's selling himself short, honestly. And he's not willing to do the hard work that it will be to continue to choose to be a good person. So, you know, I really thought that was the strongest part of the episode. And by not being in the Mirror universe, but by being in the Prime universe, you gave us the opportunity to actually explore that.
Okay, that's a good point. I'll take that a step further. At the end of the episode, he tells our Kira that he had a dream and he saw them together on Bajor and they had a family and all. So he's seeing that he has this possibility, as you were saying just then, of having a different life, having a better life, because he was moved by the things he saw in our universe as opposed to the Mirror universe. I think even beyond the black and white, being a good person or being a bad person, you know, we all find ourselves in situations in which we keep doing the same thing over and over and we're unhappy doing it, but we're not able to break out of that cycle. Sometimes there are reasons, good reasons, why we don't break out of the cycle. But I would ask the question, if that reason, let's say it's work-related and we feel we must have this job and we must do this task and there's no possibility that we could do something different, change careers, move to a new city, change relationships in our lives. We feel there's just no way I could possibly do that. But we could, right? We have that choice as a person, but we're locked into it and we just can't break out of the cycle. I get that feeling a bit from Boreal here near the end, because as you said, he does have a choice. He could stay in this universe. I think he could stay in this universe and Kira would welcome him and would help him. And other people on the station would help him. I'm sure Sisko would help him. But he can't make that choice. You know, he just feels like he is who he is. He must continue to do the bad things that he does in the Mirror universe. He can't break free of the Intendant. You know, he's only stunned her at the end. He didn't kill her. There are several layers here, I suppose, that are being explored with different degrees of subtlety by bringing a Mirror character into our universe.
Well, and I think, you know, many times when you're in that position, the thing that helps you break free is being in a community of people who care about you and are willing to support you through that time. And I think one of the things that doesn't allow Boreal to make that choice is that he hasn't been here long enough to feel that. Now, he can sense that he might have that here, but it is something that I think that you need kind of for a more extended period of time so that you can feel the safety net to make that choice to change. Because in many ways, you know, what Burial is dealing with here is much akin to the way that you might overcome an addiction, mm-hmm. you know, that you have. Because the way that you live your life is a routine and a pattern and almost an addiction because it becomes just what you do. And to break out of that takes immense work. And therefore, you usually, when you're going to make a change like that, you need some sort of safety net. And Burial hasn't been in a place where he feels that long enough. Even though Kira is kind of offering that to him, at the same time, he does have to be willing to take it. And he just isn't willing to take it at this moment yet. And, you know, I think when you look at it, it honestly does make sense. You know, he hasn't been in a position to really see the other side of life enough to truly make that life-altering choice.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, while we're talking about Kira and Burial, let's talk about Kira a bit. One reason this episode often doesn't connect as well with me is that I feel Kira is a bit out of character. And this is something that Nana Visitor said about the episode herself. She felt that Kira acts out of character. For one thing, she felt that Kira would not still have this emotional attachment to Burial, that she was over his death. And she also felt that Kira would never get so involved with a man that she had just met. The second part of that, I think, is a little bit difficult because this is not a case of Kira getting involved with a man that she had just met. I think back to Meridian with Jadzia falling in love with that man on the planet that phases in and out of time.
Yeah.
That was truly
they did
silly.
Just meet.
You know, that was ridiculous because, first of all, I don't think that Jadzia would do that. I suppose in storytelling, you might come up with the idea that like a young woman would fall in love. You know, it's kind of a stereotypical storyline, but I don't think that would be the case either, especially not for someone like Jadzia, who has all this experience in Starfleet and all this training. And when you factor in that Jadzia is not 20-something, she's 300-something.
Right.
She's not going to do that. So, you know, that whole storyline was very hard to swallow. This one is a bit different because we're not, technically we're talking about a man she just met. She doesn't know this man who is Burial from the Mirror Universe, but she knows Burial very well. And they look just alike and they have a lot of similar background traits because of the way things run parallel between the Mirror Universes. Their lives took different paths, but it's not a completely new person.
Obviously, far be it for me to tell the Nod Visitor what is right for the character of Kira. I would love to have a conversation with her about it because I do feel as if, you know, you have deeply fallen in love with somebody. And Burial was somebody that it seemed very obvious that Kira loved immensely and wanted to spend the rest of her life with. And so, just as she has that conversation with Benjamin about this whole experience, you know, Benjamin understanding this, being faced with Jennifer, and it's not his Jennifer, but it's like his Jennifer, and there's this, it's undeniable fact that you feel something towards them because there is something about them that reminds you enough of the person that you loved that it tricks your brain. And so I do think that that would have been very much part of this for Kira. Now, I can agree that maybe Kira kind of getting intimate with him so early and so quickly does seem a little bit out of character for Kira.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about, you know, we talked about that we went through the occupation arc. The fact that Kira has been a part of Bajor being occupied again by the Cardassians as well as the station. We just had the wedding. And I almost wonder if Kira in this moment isn't slightly ready for something to happen in her life. And this kind of romance kind of coming out of nowhere is, I think, an interesting thing to explore. And the fact that she's having that conversation with Jadzia at the beginning in the first place kind of shows, I think, that she might even be willing to entertain the idea of somebody coming into her life again, even if it's not Oda right now, maybe somebody else, you know. So it doesn't seem all that unnatural. The only thing is that I wouldn't expect Kira to kind of jump into bed with somebody this quickly. That does seem to be slightly out of character for her.
Yeah.
She seems to be pretty careful when it comes to that kind of liaison.
Yeah, I agree on that point. And also on the other, but the fact that it's Beryl complicates it a little bit. You know, if she met a new man, even if he had a transparent skull or a third eye, then that would be a new person. So it's like life is moving forward. But with Beryl, it becomes still a connection to that past that she might be trying to move on from in some ways. Of course, she is in the sense of overcoming the occupation of Bajor and trying to help Bajor move forward. And Beryl, the Prime Universe Beryl, was an important part of Bajor trying to move forward. So the fact that it is someone who looks just like him and is, in a sense, him, makes that maybe somewhat of a, I don't know, you know, I'm not qualified to speak about these things in terms of psychology or anything other than how I know I might feel in a situation where sort of a ghost from the past came back,
right,
in that sense. And so I think it could be not the best situation.
I think, though, that you know, to me, it almost feels akin to, there are situations in our life where if we think back, we do daydream about making a different choice. Mm-hmm. And lots of times that revolves around, you know, relationships that we had in our life and those kind of things. We think, oh, what if I had gone left instead of right? And I feel like this puts it right in front of your face. Like Kira is staring in the face of, you know, having the ability to go left instead of right.
Yeah.
Because life, you know, in this universe chose for her to go the other way because Beryl died.
This
but
is
now
a case of
back.
A second
so,
chance for her in a
yes,
sense.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so I think, you know, and that's kind of what you get to do with this whole, you know, reverse mirror universe type of story. And, you know, I think it plays out relatively interestingly. There might be some moments that don't feel completely in character, but, you know, I will say probably one of the best parts of the episode is just all the little character moments with our Deep Space Nine characters.
Yeah.
Because there are some really funny little scenes that happen between all of them. I mean, Bashir coming up to Ops just so he can get some possible news about what happened on the date. I mean, just classic little things. And I think it's good writing. This might not be the best written episode ever of Deep Space Nine, but it's those little character moments where they really are truly nailing the fact that this is a family. Like, they are very much in each other's lives. They're spending time in each other's homes. They're, you know, talking about, they're gossiping about each other with each other. You know, it's just, it's part of life, and it makes it feel very alive on Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I like. It doesn't have to be the best episode because things like this can happen, and it just makes you like feel warm in your heart because you're like, oh, I'm back with my friends.
Okay. Well, then talking about other characters and their interactions, let's talk about two characters who are sort of like the lie detectors of the episode, Quark and Worf. First, we have the scene with Worf, where Beryl is telling the story about stealing the Mechleth from the Klingon warrior, and Worf says, oh, there's no way he did that. And then Beryl actually pulls out Worf's Mechleth and cuts the jello with it. You know, so that's sort of like the mini case of, you know, Worf thinking, ah, this guy's a fraud. And then later on, we have Quark, who actually does realize that, no, Beryl's casing the joint because he wants to steal something. And it's only thanks to Quark that Kira is able to foil the plan of Brile and the intendant in the first place.
Well, and I love that scene with Worf, because I feel like Worf without Jadzia would be, you know, a little bit more upset there. But yeah. Worf is just like, more blood wine. Like, he accepts the fact that he was beaten in that moment, and he recognizes the superior intellect there. You know, like, I thought that was such a great scene and so much fun. But I love the fact that, you know, you have Quark and Beryl, who are very similar characters in the sense that their lives have been about taking advantage of people. And Quark can see that a mile away. And it makes it really interesting then that he's the one to be able to call Beryl on his BS. You're not here for, you know, just anything. You're here for a specific reason. And, you know, he's able to kind of figure out that reason and tell that to Kira. And what I really liked about Kira is that even though she didn't figure it out herself, she immediately believes Quark, not Beryl. And it shows you that I think she has a real respect for Quark that came through that occupation arc that maybe wasn't there before. So I kind of like that connection. And I think it's just, you know, the Worf scene is funny, but the actual lie detector in the episode is Quark.
Is Quark, yeah. 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 Kira's faith in Quark is something that does come through. And I think you're right. It probably does come from the events of the occupation of the station. But even more than that, I think, as we've talked about many times on here with Quark, his arc from the beginning of the series all the way through, and now we're well into season 6, even though the rest of the crew is suspicious of him and they know that he's often up to behind-the-scenes deals and things that aren't completely honest because he's a Ferengi, they've also come to trust him and he's become part of the family. And although Kira might keep her eye on him, she does know that he has the crew's best interest at heart most of the time and that she can trust what he's telling her. And I think that's an interesting contrast between the Quark that she met in the beginning of the series and the relationship they had and then where they are now.
Well, and it seems like Quark has a relationship with the Bajoran people that's been fostered throughout all of these years of being with them. And, you know, the fact that he's kind of figured out that they're looking to steal an orb. Look, Quark would like to make a buck off of anything. But the last thing I think he's going to do at this point in his life is take advantage of a people like that. Mm-hmm. Especially with something that's so important to them. And so I really appreciated that a Quark doing that altruistic thing. He's looking out for them for no other reason than it's the right thing to do to look out for these people who are about to be taken advantage of. And not, you know, necessarily the easiest thing to tell Kira that you've had the wool pulled over your eyes, because she doesn't always necessarily respond to that kind of thing well. But again, here, it almost seems as though she's always been kind of waiting in the episode for the other shoe to drop. Like, this is too good to be true. Mm-hmm. And it turns out to be too good to be true.
Well, Matthew, there's one more point that I want to touch on before we wrap up the discussion as it pertains to the Mirror Universe. And when people think of DS9's Mirror Universe, of course, they think of crossover, Through the Looking Glass, Shattered Mirror. I feel like it kind of tapers off after that. You know, Resurrection is one that it doesn't immediately pop into mind for me that it's a Mirror Universe episode, as I'm just kind of going down the list of Mirror Universe episodes. And that's probably because, as we've discussed, it takes place in our universe. In fact, it's the only Mirror Universe episode that has no scenes in the Mirror Universe. And then we have one more to come, The Emperor's New Cloak, which is sort of a, I don't know, it's a fun, interesting, maybe odd episode. We'll talk about it next time. But my question is, at this point, the fourth installment, do you feel that DS9 had kind of run its course in the Mirror Universe and then they were starting to just kind of grasp for Mirror Universe ideas to have another MU episode in the sixth season and then later the seventh season? Or do you see this somewhat unique take as adding texture to the Mirror Universe storyline and to DS9?
Well, you know, I think it does add some texture, because one of the things that we really get from this episode is that there is kind of a lack of religious faith in the Mirror Universe, mm-hmm. In the way that we see it in the Prime Universe. And the fact that, you know, the Intendant wants to do with religion what all people that have used religious faith as a way to garner followers or to be able to control people. Like, she's, I mean, it, basically, she is everything that's wrong with what people hate about religion, right? Or what they always accuse organized religion of being is just this way to control the masses or any of those kind of things. And that's exactly what they're wanting to do with it. And yet, what I thought was most interesting is to watch Barile be very moved by the expressions of faith by the Bajorans here and see how it really could benefit him. And I think that's, in the end, the reason that he chooses to not steal the orb and also chooses to just leave with the Intendant without any of this, because I think he realizes that it would be wrong. And so, to me, I think it did add some texture, because it gave us another little piece of the Mirror Universe that we hadn't really seen before. And I think this was a more clever way to do it. Instead of relying on always crossing over to the other side and having to spend time there, it was interesting to do it this way. Is it the best episode of the Mirror Universe, you know, episodes that they've done? No. Is it the worst? I'm not sure yet. We haven't covered the last one yet. So, but I think it's definitely, there's some interesting ideas expressed with it. And so, yeah, I think mm-hmm. they did a pretty good. I don't know. What do you think?
I think going into the discussion, I've always felt that Resurrection was a weak episode, and that the Mirror Universe sort of ran out of steam after Shattered Mirror. I think the first three installments are very interesting and they're very good. And this one felt a bit like, well, let's do another Mirror Universe episode. And maybe the writers felt like, but let's do something different. Like, I don't want to just go back to the Mirror Universe again and do this again. Although I know that's not exactly the case anyway, because we did have Jennifer come over once too. So it's not the first time that they've sort of done this role reversal. But here it's more extreme, because it really is just Barile's experience
right
in our world. And as you say, how does that affect him? So on that front, it's creatively good to try something different. The next episode that we're going to talk about next time, The Emperor's New Cloak, is maybe a little bit more of that fun over-the-top Mirror Universe world. I don't know exactly how I feel. I think our discussions are interesting for me, even as someone who has watched DS9 over and over and has watched these episodes many times, to sort of work out my own feelings about them. So I'm curious to know what the listeners think, and if the things that we've talked about today with regard to Resurrection touched on any new points that they have not considered and maybe changed how they feel about the episode, because I know listening to you has changed how I feel about this episode a bit, because I think that perhaps more so than usual, you have to work to find the layers in the storytelling here to see how the experience is affecting Barile. Perhaps because we think of this more as a Kira episode, we're overlooking Barile, like he's just there as the impetus for the Kira storyline, whereas right. actually the story's more about him, not about Kira, which may also be why we feel like Kira's not exactly who we would expect her to be in this episode, because she's actually kind of helping along his story. Again, now that's not exactly a Mirror Universe thing, but it does add texture to the universe. It does add texture to DS9. Another question pops in my head quickly related to this. They're doing all these new Star Trek series now. We've got Section 31 coming out with Michelle Yeoh. We've got the new Picard series. We've got animated stuff coming out. Supposing they decided to do a Mirror Universe series, which is something I know many fans have thought about in the past and are probably interested in. Which would you rather see? A Mirror Universe series that brought us what we would expect, which would be maybe like Enterprise, In a Mirror Darkly, or Discovery Season 1, second half, kind of like all this villainy and stuff happening in the Mirror Universe, or a series that really explored the nature of two universes running parallel to one another with some differences, and characters can cross back and forth. And the stories are not always about evil or villainy or such, but the stories are more about how these interactions with the two universes going from side to side affect people on an individual level, which I will say in defense of Discovery's Mirror Universe trip, which at times I thought was a bit gimmicky, I think they did successfully do that for some of the characters in Discovery. How did their experience in the Mirror Universe affect them on a personal level? How did it change their view of things? And that's something that they could do with the Mirror Universe series.
There really is so much you could do with the Mirror Universe as a series. They could make it very interesting, and part of that would be to be able to explore, and in many ways, the darker side and how you can make those choices to go a completely different path. You know, what we know from the Mirror Universe is the path really begins with the Vulcans landing and, you know, them shooting them instead of welcoming them. And so the choices that you make, and I think you could actually create a very interesting show around that idea, that it is the choices that we make and kind of challenge that. And so in the end, you know, the Mirror Universe, though, I think is probably best left to be not explored necessarily in a series, because I think it's best utilized infrequently.
Yeah, I do too.
And so, you know, what I think they do here in Deep Space Nine, I appreciate that every season we don't have to visit the Mirror Universe. Like, you know, we do. We skip some. So, you know, that's good. And this might not be my favorite Mirror Universe episode, but I, like you, going into it, wasn't really sure if, like, this is that one, you know? But I found some things to really enjoy in it that actually piqued my interest and kept me going in it. And so I would say, all in all, this is still an episode that I might revisit more often than I thought I would after rewatching it this time, personally.
Okay, that's interesting. Good. All right. Well, you know, that actually sounds like a final thought. Do you have any other final thoughts on this episode?
Yeah. You know, the thing that I really enjoyed the most were the little character moments, and I just really appreciated that. And I felt like, you know, obviously season six, we're really doing that well. And this is family. So those are my favorite things that happened in Deep Space Nine. That's one of the reasons I love revisiting it, because, you know, it is in many ways like coming back home, you know. And so we'll always leave a part of ourselves on Deep Space Nine. So
it's what we left behind.
It is what we left behind.
Yeah, my final thoughts on it are, discussing it with you has helped me see a bit more in the episode. It's a middle of the road episode for me in terms of the overall series. It's not the best written episode, but it's also not poorly written. The characters at times, well, Kira in particularly, as we've discussed, seem a bit off, but not as much as one might first think. And I do like the idea of adding more texture to the story, both the DS9, but especially the Mirror Universe. And I guess my final thought on it would be that if this is an episode that you don't like, or that you often skip, or that you just sort of have it playing in the background while you're doing other things, maybe give it another watch and see if you find something new in there, because there is a little bit more here than first meets the eye. Well, Matthew, it has been great discussing Resurrection and, of course, continuing our Mirror Universe series, just one to go, and then we'll be moving on to other topics in the Deep Space Nine world. But DS9, the Mirror Universe, and Resurrection aren't the only things we've been talking about on the network this past week, so here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Meta Treks.
Wow, I had no idea that was possible. It's this ongoing link that exists between Michael Burnham and Sarek because of this mind meld that he had with her when she was a child.
Mike, I'm going to give you a Radio Shack joke because I know you and I both have Radio Shack experience. If this if this episode happened in the 1990s, they would have had prepaid long-distance mind meld cards.
To the journey!
But I do have a question. Why was Neelix focusing on classic American cuisine as a marketable job skill in going back to the Alpha Quadrant? Why classic American cuisine? Why not Chinese, Japanese, or Vulcan? Come on.
I think that the culinary tastes will continue to degrade for the next 3 or 4 centuries. And by the 24th century, it'll only be classic American that's left. You know, all other cuisine will have gone by the wayside.
So pot roast, pot pie, apple pie.
Yeah, every restaurant is Taco Bell, essentially. Yeah, it's the Demolition Man problem.
That's disgusting.
Literary Treks.
I think we could not do this novel without inviting a special guest, Amy Nelson. Amy, how are you doing?
Hi, I am so excited. Imzadi, Riker, Troy, it is the best. I am so grateful, honored, pleased that you even thought of me for coming on Literary Trek. So thank you so, so much.
Yeah, we're like, do you think there's anybody on the network that would like to talk about Deanna Troi?
I think I have corner on the market on that one.
Standard Orbit.
Vulcans are not incapable of showing emotion, but apparently they are incapable of lying.
That's their reputation. I mean, who told you? Vulcans tell you that? Of course they would. I mean, that's their reputation, you know.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us everywhere that you get your podcasts. Of course, we're in Apple Podcasts and on iTunes. We're in Google Play Music, but they're transitioning everyone to Google Podcasts, which is actually a different app. So if you're looking for things on Google Play Music and you're not finding it, download the Google Podcasts app. That's where things are. Most of our shows are now in Spotify. Of course, we're on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud. Pretty much anywhere you get podcasts, you're going to find us. Just search for The Orb for this show or Trek FM for all of our shows and grab the master feed, which contains every episode of every show that we do, and that includes Mission Log and Larry Nemechek's Trek Files as well. And as always, you can go to the website, view the show page. The show notes are there on the page, and you can download the audio file from there, or grab the RSS link if you have some other sort of reader that you like to use. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show and on Resurrection. You can send Matthew and me an email by going to the website at trek.fm/contact. Just use the form there and choose The Orb from the drop-down list, and that will come to both of us by email. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm, and our main Facebook page is facebook.com/trekfm. Perhaps the best place to join in the overall discussion with us and other listeners, though, is the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come up. But if it doesn't, just type the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so if you're new to the group, you'll need to join. There are 2 questions you need to answer. Be sure to do that, and then an admin can let you in. So, Matthew, that's how people can find both of us, but if people want to find you and all the other podcasting that you're doing, your Parsec Award-winning podcasting, you're a busy guy. Tell people where to find you.
Well, you can find me under the name MattRushing02 all over the place. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and Letterboxd all under that name. So those are the best places to find me. You can catch up with me here doing the 602 Club with my co-host Christy as we talk about all the fandoms we love that aren't Star Trek. So it's a great place to check up with us there, and it's a lot of fun doing that show. You just never know what we're going to talk about. You also can find me on the Nerd Party Network doing Owl Post with Dre Kaufman, talking about every chapter of Harry Potter, one chapter at a time. I do that podcast that I won a Parsec for with my good friend John Mills, Aggressive Negotiations. It's a Star Wars podcast talking about all the things we love about Star Wars in that podcast. That's great. And I hope you will check it out. And then last but not least, doing a show called Cinema Stories. And that is with my friend Courtney, where we talk about films through the lens of faith. Now, Chris, maybe, you know, people would like to catch up with you and see what's going on with your life as you have an ever busy life there in the metropolis of Tokyo. Where can people find you?
Well, the best place to find me these days is on Twitter. C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's my name. I use Twitter more than any other platform. So if you want to just keep up with day-to-day stuff or chat with me, if you tweet at me, I will reply. I do like to have conversations on Twitter. That's C. Brian Jones. That's also my username everywhere in social media. Elsewhere on the network, I do The Ready Room. That's my main show. These days, I do it with Larry Nemechek. We've kind of changed the format, and it's usually just Larry and me chatting about Star Trek, although eventually we may get back to our previous format of doing episode reviews. The main reason we don't do that right now is simply a time issue and the extreme difficulty that I have coordinating four people in different cities, given that I'm based in Tokyo and my work schedule is insane these days. I'm managing editor of two publications, which publish every 2 weeks, so it's quite difficult to podcast, but I hope to be able to do more. And you can find those episodes, though, of course, in the back catalog on the master feed. Larry and I did do a new episode last weekend where we're talking about all the new Star Trek series that are in development, so you can catch that over there on The Ready Room. I'll be doing Notes from the Edge again now that Discovery Season 2 has kicked off. I'm hoping to get my Notes from the Edge for Brother out there this coming week. And you can find my writing, my past writing, on the official website at StarTrek.com. Hopefully I'll have some new stuff coming up there pretty soon. And that's about it for me. So just hoping to get back into podcasting a bit more. Now, I would also like to take a moment really quickly and thank our associate producers here on The Orb. Norman C. Lau, William Murray, K. Elizabeth Shaw, James Muldrow. And if you are supposed to be on this list and I did not say your name, please send me a message, because as I just described, being kind of out of the loop because of my chaotic work schedule, I am also out of the loop on admin tasks related to this show. So please let me know. We want to make sure everyone gets credit for your support and helping us keep The Orb coming to everyone. And if you would like to support the network or this show, you can do that through Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. We have all kinds of perks and different ways you can be involved in the network. We do need your support. It's very expensive to create, publish, and distribute these shows. And we thank you greatly for supporting us through Patreon. So thank you, everyone, for helping us keep the network going. Well, Matthew, hopefully we'll get another Orb out pretty soon for everyone. We're very much trying to figure out how our recording schedule works, and hopefully no one will steal an Orb while we're trying to work that out.
Well, Chris, I definitely hope that people will stop trying to steal the Orbs, because I'd gotta sleep. But we want to thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the Orb. Recording.
Recording. Second pair of pants. Don't ask why. Today. Okay.
All right. It's been a real shit show.
Yeah. We have to go a second time. All right.
That's what Jadzia said.
Yeah, right. Okay. And then Kira said, "You can do that?" No.
Oh, gosh.
Okay.
That's what we that would have been said on a classic episode of the Ready Room.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, back in the day. That's right. Okay.
All right.
Here we go. Okay.